The job market shows some signs of thawing.
But next year still looks a little chilly for retailers.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, hello, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org. It is Thursday, December 30th. The number of new applications for jobless benefits dropped to 388,000 last week. That's the lowest level since July of 2008. For more on this, let's turn to Diane Swank. She's chief economist at Mesro Financial. She's with us from Michigan this morning. Hi, Diane.
Good morning.
So what do you make of this number from the Labor Department?
Well, certainly the trend is in the right direction, and it's good news. But we do know this time of the year a lot of seasonal distortions can suppress the number. So I hate to pop any champagne corks yet because we're still a long way from seeing labor markets fully heal. And I think we're going to see some distortions in the next several weeks as well, everything from closing around Christmas to the shuttered government offices that we saw during the winter snows in the East Coast will, again, suppress unemployment claims because people just couldn't get in to apply.
So maybe not as great as it sounds. Diane, so much has happened in the economy this year. I want, as we close out this year, if you can put it in context for us, how will you remember 2010?
Well, you know, unfortunately, being in Michigan, I'm always reminded of reality. And I was recently in a Walmart in Michigan here and looking in the shampoo aisle, helping a woman find some shampoo. And as I pulled down a moderately priced brand for fine hair because her worrying was having her hair fall out of her head, She looked at me and she said, "I can't afford that." And it was less than I would pay for a cup of coffee at Starbucks. And I realized she told me she needed to buy shampoo and conditioner in one now because she couldn't afford to buy them separately anymore. And that's the reality for far too many people still in 2011, even as the economy is healing.
Puts everything in perspective. Diane Swank, chief economist at Mesro Financial. Thanks so much and have a happy new year.
Happy new year to you, too.
That cold and very white Christmas they had in much of the country certainly wasn't what retailers were dreaming of. Research firm ShopperTrack estimates stores lost about $1 billion worth of business on key post-Christmas shopping days. Overall, though, it was the best holiday retailers have seen in years. Can they also expect a happy new year? Eve Tro has more.
Quiznos, Blockbuster, Foot Locker, The Gap, those are just a few of the companies that shuttered hundreds of storefronts in 2010. Harold Bordwin is with real estate firm Keen Consultants. He says not nearly as many stores will shut down this year, but
there are going to be retailers who are still closing stores, and I think that where there are already dark stores, those are likely to remain for a while.
He says rent has dropped for vacant retail space, but many companies that might expand as their sales improve can't because they're stuck in expensive leases. But Bordwin says at least we won't see a lot more retailers going out of business altogether.
Retailers have gotten very good at managing their costs. Most of the retailers who have made it this far have stabilized themselves and should be able to make it.
Make it through this year, he says, and start looking to grow beyond 2011. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Well, Republicans will take over the House of Representatives next week, and cutting spending will be high on the agenda. But plans to take money that's been set aside for highway maintenance and spend it on other things is already running into opposition. Marketplace's David Gurr reports from Washington.
When you fill up your gas tank, a percentage of what you pay for gas goes into the Highway Trust Fund. Pete Ruane heads the American Road and Transportation Builders Association. He doesn't want Congress to touch it.
Because the whole funding situation will then be subject to the annual whims and caprice of Congress through the appropriations process.
The House GOP transition team says the country can't afford any more sacred cows. All non-security spending is on the table. Former Republican Representative Mickey Edwards served in Congress for 16 years.
Everybody thought that if you cut anything from their programs, if you didn't increase the spending on their programs, there would be very dire consequences.
He says cuts are tough because each of these programs has some merit. But with a deficit this big, the government can't afford to fund them all. In Washington, I'm David Gurra for Marketplace.
New York commuters will be paying more in the new year. The MTA is raising tolls and subway fares for the third time in 3 years. Monthly unlimited Metro cards like the one I have to buy will be $104 now.
That is $15 more expensive. How are you going to afford it, Jeremy?
I don't know. And it comes just a few months after MTA service cutbacks, too, Stacey. So it's a tough job to be a New Yorker these days.
It's like insult to injury. And unfortunately, we've had bad news from trains and automobiles. automobiles and planes are not looking much better. Mm. The massive snowstorm caused airlines to lose an estimated $150 million and thousands of passengers to lose a few years off of their lives. One such passenger is Peter Cohen, author of Capital Rising. His holiday flight from Milwaukee to Boston was canceled on Sunday. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
So from what I understand, your flight from Milwaukee to Boston was canceled on Sunday. Tell us about it.
It was canceled on Sunday, and they cheerfully told us that we could get a flight to Boston on Friday. So a five-day wait in Milwaukee.
And what did you decide to do?
We decided to drive. So we rented a car, and we drove in 2 days. We got back Tuesday morning. And so, if I had waited for the airlines to give me a flight, I'd still be in Milwaukee right now.
Wow. Now, you wrote in a column in Daily Finance that you expect a lot more Milwaukee-type drives in your future and, indeed, in everyone's future. Why is that?
Well, it has to do with a statistic called load factors, which basically means what percentage of the seats are filled on airplanes. And the factor is at a record level of 82%, which is fantastic for profits. But it means that on this particular situation, which we were in, and obviously thousands of others were in, it's a 4.6-day wait for getting your flight, because every seat is full and you just can't get an empty seat for almost 5 days.
Well, obviously, if you're a passenger, this is terrible. But from a purely business perspective, is this the airlines being smart?
It's fantastic for the airlines. Basically, no. what happened is that the airlines have lost $50 billion in the last decade. But in this year, it looks like they're going to be profitable for the first time. They're going to make $3 billion in profit. What's really interesting is that as their load factors increased up to that 82%, the estimates for their losses kept going down and down. So in April, they were expected to lose $2.8 billion, but last week, an airline industry consultant said the industry would make $3 billion, which is probably the first time the industry has made money in a long, long time.
Well, not great news for us, but good news for the airline industry. That's Peter Cohen in Boston. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
He wasn't getting quite enough airtime before he had a personal experience.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, November 12th. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. This morning, Pope Benedict signed a document to make the Vatican's financial operations more transparent.
Oh, right, because the Vatican City has its own financial system.
It does, and they're trying to bring that system in line with international regulations. I don't know whether this is the reason, but we might mention that the Vatican's bank is currently under investigation for money laundering.
Wow.
From Rome, here's the BBC's David Willey.
The Vatican announced it'll create a new watchdog to oversee all its financial operations. The move was required by the European Union and by other international organizations involved in the fight against money laundering and the financing of terrorism. Robert Mickens of the Tablet newspaper, another Vatican watcher, says the bank previously resisted these global financial rules.
The banking operation under the umbrella of the Vatican usually is seen as an independent agency without outside intervention, and the moves today reflect pressure from the outside.
That pressure comes because of a criminal investigation against the Vatican Bank. The Vatican insists that there'd been a misunderstanding and there'd been no wrongdoing by their bank or by its employees. But despite this move towards more transparency, it'll still take some time before the Vatican is put on the so-called white list of developed countries that have agreed to share tax information and crack down on tax havens. From Rome, I'm the BBC's David Willey for Marketplace.
So, Jeremy, any New Year's resolutions?
I always make the resolution to go to the gym more, but it's sort of, like everybody else, lasts for a little bit and then I give up on it.
That's funny because I always make the resolution to go to the gym more, too. And the same thing happens. What about this drinking more beer?
More beer?
Yeah.
I don't think I need to make a resolution to do that.
Well, actually, drinking beer is very last year. Bathing in beer is apparently the next big thing. Caitlin Carroll visited a spa in Germany that is putting a new kind of suds into their baths.
Oh. Susanna Toschner-Schmidt greets me at the door of a small hotel and spa. We are in the town of Neusella, population 20,000, about an hour east of Berlin. home to the original beer bath.
A beer bath is a quite good wellness act. The bath has a calming action. It's good for your soul and your skin.
Schmidt helped develop the recipe. It includes black beer, secret herbs, and yeast. You can buy a bottle of the beer bath from the local brewery for about $5 and try it at home, or experience the full $60 treatment, like me. We walk past the front room, filled with antlers and country kitsch, and head downstairs to the baths. It doesn't look like a conventional spa. The tubs are in a cave-like room, lit only by candles.
It smells nice.
Yeah, you can take your clothes off. Yes, okay.
Schmidt turns on the tap, and hot water flows out. She turns on another tap, and dark beer runs into the tub. The bubbles start rising, and I get in.
Ooh, yeah.
It's sort of a bizarre experience. Schmidt pours herbs and yeast in the water. It feels a little soupy and kind of makes my skin itch. But beer baths like this have helped build the economy of this tiny town. Germany has more than 1,200 breweries and 5,000 brands of beer. It's tough to stand out from the pack. The local Neusella Brewery, which partners with the spa, now does a brisk business selling bottles of the beer bath, as well as other healthy brews, like anti-aging and marathon beer. Schmidt says there are even copycat beer baths opening throughout Europe.
But it's not like our beer baths. In some baths, they give bottle beer in a bath and that's all.
This beer bath is getting more popular. Between the brewery and the spa, more than 100,000 people visited Neusella this year. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
You can see pictures of Caitlin's beer bath and the town at our website, marketplace.org.
Looks pretty soupy.
Yeah, it's maybe it's an acquired taste.
Well, the weekly jobless claims number, Stacey, that we talked about a little earlier is just one of many weekly indicators we use to gauge the health of the economy. But now we're going to take the long view. Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell, has selected a few other measures of the economy that he's been following and will be following next year. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Jeremy.
So let's start out with housing, since the latest numbers that we got just this week are pretty gloomy. Prices are down across the country. Supply is up. What are you going to be watching here in 2011?
Well, I have a slightly more optimistic take on the market, and it has to do with the indicator that I'm following, home ownership versus renting. Because remember, these two markets compete for the household dollar. And Richard Green is professor at University of Southern California, did a back of the envelope calculation looking at the median home versus the median rental unit. And what he decided is for 2011 that owning the median home is about 10% less per square foot than renting the median rental unit. What that tells me is you can still have some price declines and ownership is good.
So there's a glimmer of hope there in the housing market for the year ahead. How else are you going to be gauging the economy, Chris? I mean, we talk about GDP growth or durable goods orders, things like that. What are you going to be looking at?
Apple stock. Apple stock. Now, can I read you one number?
Absolutely.
One number. Okay. So this comes from Morningstar, and I clicked on their 10-year chart. And it says the overall change in Apple stock for the decade, 4,275.77%.
Oh, my God. 4,000%.
This is incredible, but this is important. This is the innovative side of our economy, Google, Facebook, Twitter, the whole wireless mobile internet world. And this area of our economy is exploding. That's the real glimmer of hope.
Why didn't you tell me about the Apple stock 10 years ago, Chris? Now, all right, so the tech sector is doing well, but what about jobs? That's got to be the biggest story of the year, or at least one of them.
It is. So let's watch the temp sector. Over a quarter of all job hires by the private sector in 2010 were temp jobs. That's going to continue in 2011, but hopefully eventually we'll see those turn into permanent jobs.
All right. Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, happy new year. Thanks so much for everything in 2010, and we will be talking to you very frequently in 2011.
Happy new year.
Before Congress left town for the holidays, lawmakers failed to pass a new budget for next year. They just extended this year's budget. And because of that, the space agency NASA will have to keep spending money on a rocket program that's been canceled. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
The rocket's called Ares 1, and it was meant to replace the space shuttle, which is being mothballed. But President Obama scuttled the Ares 1 in October when he told NASA to use private sector rockets instead. By law, NASA's forced to fund the defunct program to the tune of $500 million because Congress didn't pass a new budget for 2011. It just extended the old budget, which protected the Ares 1 and jobs in Alabama, where it's made. George Washington University space program expert John Logsdon says NASA's in a bind.
Trying to make the best possible use of the money allocated to it without being able to cancel programs that, according to the White House and NASA leadership, should be canceled and get started with a new approach to human spaceflight.
Logsdon says NASA's leaders will now try to direct funding to parts of the Ares 1 program that'll help it develop a next-generation spaceship, one that could eventually make the long trip to an asteroid, the moon, or even Mars. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
And finally, Stacey, be careful what you bet on. A jewelry store owner in North Carolina made a bet with his customers that it wouldn't snow more than 3 inches in the city of Asheville on Christmas Day.
Oh, no. What did he bet?
Well, he said if it did snow that much, he'd refund everything that was purchased in his jewelry store between November 26th and December 11th. Well, guess what happened?
Oh, it snowed and he had to refund all those purchases?
It snowed 6 inches in Asheville on Christmas Day, and he now owes his customers $400,000.
Is that going to bankrupt him?
Well, actually, he took out an insurance policy, so the insurance company owes his customers $400,000. Now, I don't know which company it is, but it sounds to me a lot like a bet that, I don't know, AIG would have taken.
Oh, let's hope you got some insurance for that punchline, Jeremy.
I've already gotten letters this morning from people who are angry that I'm taking shots at AIG. I feel like, you know, we get at least a few years after you bail out a company for $180 billion.
We own AIG. I feel like
we can make fun of our own company. That's
right. We've literally earned the right to make fun of AIG. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.